We were all shocked when we heard the news. For weeks on this show, we've been talking about, is Donald Trump going to invade Venezuela? Is he going to hold back? And then, boom, we woke up Saturday morning and discovered that US forces had just gone in there, captured Venezuela's president, brought him to New York, and they're about to put him on trial. It was an event that shook the world, and we're going to look at its ramifications on today's Trumpet World Week in Review. It has been called the fastest regime change operation in modern history, though whether or not it is actually regime change, we'll talk about soon. 150 fighter jets and bombers from 20 different bases cleared a path through Venezuelan air defenses for US Special Forces. Special Forces flew to Caracas, broke into the presidential palace, grabbed Nicolas Maduro and his wife before they could lock themselves in their steel safe room, and brought them back out on a helicopter. No US soldiers were killed. Only one aircraft was damaged. An impressive display in many ways of American power. But this isn't just about Venezuela, about Latin America, the United States. This shakes the whole world. So we've borrowed the Trumpet Daily studio once again to assemble our full panel. Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, and we've got Mihailo Zekig on Zoom to talk about the global ramifications of what just happened. So first of all, Andrew, you've been talking about this for weeks, for months, the build-up, will they invade? So perhaps you could start by just giving us the background on what just happened here.
Yeah, like many other news analysts, I had expected regime change in Venezuela soon. And even, I think a couple months ago, I even mentioned on this program that I thought it would happen within a year. Now, I didn't think it would happen in as dramatic as a way as it did. Like I said, I was back when Donald Trump was blowing up oil, or seizing oil tankers and blowing up drug trafficking boats. I thought there was going to be like a prolonged economic siege of Venezuela. The economy was going to deteriorate. There'd be uprisings amongst the people. Maybe in the most dramatic turn of events, a limited U.S. military invasion to support the people's uprising against Venezuela and have like this strong, drawn-out conflict to bring about regime change. I was not expecting Delta Force to just drop in the middle of the night, arrest him, and bring him to New York. So that was, I did just want to just pause for a minute to just sink in, like, just what a brilliantly executed coup this was. Now, like I said, cutting off the head of Venezuela is a good start. Now, it actually isn't officially regime change yet, is that the Maduro's vice president has taken Maduro's place, and the regime is still in place. Donald Trump, I think he said this morning or yesterday that it might be take years of U.S. oversight before Venezuela's ready to actually have its own new regime. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has already met with the Secretary of the State of the Vatican, something else we talked about on this program, Vatican involvement, to start discussing what's the path forward from here or what's the new regime going to look like.
The future is something we can get on kind of into the second half. But I think it is worth taking some time to digest what just happened. And I think you're exactly right to highlight the brilliant execution of this. And I think that's something that has to be admitted. Like, even if this raid could be a horrible idea, but you could still say, well, it was carried out masterfully with a lot of power, a lot of preparation. I mean, I think it's incredible the amount of preparation they put in. I think the CIA, they were saying the CIA even knew Maduro's pets' names. They set up a secure copy of his secure compound. They practiced raiding that. And yet, despite all of these preparations, none of this leaked out. There were no kind of spoilers. We didn't know that this kidnap operation or capture operation was about to happen. There is a lot of power there in the United States. And obviously, we've highlighted some of the problems with the US military and how competent is it, there's still a lot of competence there. There definitely may be weaknesses in other areas, but an incompetent military couldn't pull this off at all. So there's a lot of power there. And actually, in a lot of ways, this does kind of show up and expose some of the other militaries around the world. People have been drawing the comparison between Donald Trump's special military operation to capture Maduro and Russia's special military operation to capture Zelensky in Ukraine that has now been going on for several years and cost infinitely more lives. So maybe we can bring in Jeremiah coming from the Asian perspective. I mean, Venezuela had close ties to Russia, to China. What's been the impact on those countries and their response to what happened?
Yes, for Russia and China, the arrest of Maduro was a bit of a mixed bag, but on the whole, this was a significant blow to both of them, and that's because Nicolas Maduro was an ally to both Russia and China. Under his rule, Venezuela was a major purchaser of Russian defense equipment, billions of dollars worth. Russia also had deep energy sector cooperation with Maduro and even a strategic partnership agreement that the two of them signed last year. And so this partnership was blown up by Delta Force in about 30 minutes' time. And then with China, we see a similar picture. If anything, this was even a bigger loss for the Chinese. You know, China had given Venezuela more than $100 billion in loans in recent years, which Venezuela repaid mostly with oil. Vast sums of oil. By the end of last year, around 80% of all Venezuelan oil exports were going to China, and that was tremendously important to the Chinese. They don't have much oil in China, not nearly enough to meet their needs, so they have to bring it in from other nations. And now that this Venezuelan supply is compromised, that's a major blow to China. And then being allied with Maduro also allowed Russia and China to make Venezuela basically a strategic foothold in the U.S.'s backyard. You know, they had nurtured this anti-American ally for more than a decade, and they thought that they could use that to work against U.S. interests in the region. But that foothold was pretty much destroyed overnight. So it's a notable blow to the hegemonic goals of Russia and China. And then it's also a big humiliation for Russia and China because during America's Delta Force raid, the weapon systems that both Russia and China had stationed there to protect Maduro failed spectacularly. Consider first Russia's S-300 air defense system. These are long-range anti-aircraft missile batteries with radars and launchers. They're designed to basically deny the skies to the enemy. And Russia has always marketed these as the, quote, shield of God. You know, Russia said not even a fly could pass through the S-300. And they pulled in billions of dollars selling these to regimes around the world, including the Maduro regime in Venezuela. Maduro had at least 12 of these so-called shields of God in Caracas protecting him. But on January 3rd, not a single one of them fired a shot. They were apparently blind and deaf. You know, the U.S. took out power stations first and also used growlers. These are the electronic warfare aircraft. And all of this was enough to render these vaunted Russian systems totally useless. So that was just a major blow to Russia's defense industry. All the other regimes that have these so-called shields of God, like Iran and Turkey and China, they all woke up to this news on January 3rd and realized that they are basically naked. So it's hard to overstate what a blow this was to the prestige of Russia's defense exports. And then with China, it's a very similar situation. China had sold Maduro somewhere between 9 and 12 units of its JY-27 anti-stealth radars. And these were all right there around Maduro's compound in Caracas. And China had marketed these as being able to detect and defend against even the F-35. That's America's top-tier fighter jet. But it turns out they couldn't even detect and defend against helicopters that swooped in and grabbed Maduro. So the world found out that these are basically Timu radars, you know, poorly made and very poorly functioning, at least when up against U.S. gear. And then there's also a situation now where if the U.S. takes charge of Venezuela, then America will have access to all these Russian and Chinese systems, be able to study their vulnerabilities up close, and be able to completely neutralize them in future situations. So on the whole, it was a pretty devastating loss and a humiliation for Russia and China, but there is some notable silver lining for them, and that is that many in the U.S. and around the world view the Trump administration's move as kind of a punch in the nose to the rules-based order. And of course, Russia and China hate the rules-based order. They say might makes right. They say the law of the jungle is the only law that matters, and bigger countries should be allowed to run roughshod over smaller ones simply because they can. So in that way, this move by the Trump administration could be seen as something that establishes more precedent for Russia and China to be able to illegally kind of domineer their own neighbors and assert more control over whoever they want to. And you could also lump in President Trump's threats to Denmark, I think, in that same category. That is music to the ears of the Russians and the Chinese to hear NATO's most powerful nation threatening another NATO member in a way that, you know, barons and dukes back in the Dark Ages would have threatened each other. Because Russia and China, they hear that as license to bring the world back into a new Dark Ages. And Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury, he has written a lot over the years about the world returning to a new Dark Ages. It's an era that the Bible calls the times of the Gentiles. And it's a time when America is no longer globally dominant and when nations like Russia and China will be able to accomplish their expansionist ambition. So we can be sure that the days of the so-called rules-based order are very much numbered. And if anyone would like to understand more about that and what the Bible says about that future dark era, one of Mr. Fleury's big articles on that topic is called The Climax of Man's Rule Over Man. It's built mainly around a passage in the Gospel of Luke, and I think that that would be a very illuminating read for anyone who would like to understand more about that.
I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, there's some discussion as to international law, whether this was lawful or not. I mean, this is the thing about international law is, ultimately in the United States, there is a single hierarchy of courts that culminates in the Supreme Court that gives a definitive, yes, this is lawful, and no, this is not lawful. Not to say the Supreme Court is correct in all of its rulings, but as far as it applies to the United States, there is a single definitive answer. That is not the case in international law. There are a whole bunch of different courts. There's no clear hierarchy of them. Often cases that can only be referred to these courts with the consent of both parties. So a country can say what I did was lawful, another country can say no, it wasn't. And there isn't a good, simple way to get an authoritative answer on that. So anyway, that's the state of play with this discussion, with some people saying it's not lawful, others saying it is, and it's hard to get an authoritative answer. New York Times said, well, what would constrain your power as Commander-in-Chief, Mr. Trump? Would you be constrained by international law? And he said, basically, no. He said, I will be constrained only by one thing, my own morality, my own mind. That's the only thing that can stop me. And I think there's like, I agree with you, and I think there's another, like, there's two different points that I think are here. One is, that is kind of worrying and lawless to a degree to have a leader say, I'm not going to be held accountable to any kind of law. I'm just going to do what is right in my own eyes. And the Bible has the entire book of Judges is a horrible time. And it says over and over again, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. The result was chaos and anarchy. But at the same time, that is this world. And that's what world leaders are doing anyway. Already, they're doing that which was right in their own eyes. We have that already. And so I think in some ways, this kind of rules-based international order is a mirage. Like, does it even exist right now? And I think instead it's, you have countries like the EU are very good at cloaking their own ambition in international law, whereas they're just doing what they want to do, but going about it in a way that they can justify. And so in many ways, when Donald Trump says, well, only my own morality constrains me, it's easy to look at that and say, well, I wouldn't want Vladimir Putin, and I wouldn't want Xi Jinping, and I wouldn't want Russia and China or Germany to only be constrained by their own morality and say we're going to just ignore international law. But also, that's what they're doing already. So you know, does it make that much difference to shatter this illusion? But I think the big takeaway from this is exactly what you pointed to, you know, Mr. Flurry's article, the times of the Gentiles, the end of man's rule over man. We're reaching an end of a period that has been relatively peaceful, the world since World War II. And I think it's been that way largely due to American dominance. In some ways, doing things like policing Maduro and protecting America's backyard extends and preserves that dominance, more so than things that Barack Obama was doing that were cloaked in talk about a rules-based international order. But we definitely are moving into this time frame where America's restraining influence and Britain's, to a lesser extent, as it's waned in power over those last 80 years, that has kind of forced people to play by a set of rules and trade by a set of rules, that is coming to an end. And some of what Donald Trump is doing is responding to that. But we are emerging into a world of strongmen. And another of those strongmen, and another big client of Russian weapons, another nation that's very involved with what's going on in Venezuela, is Iran. So, Mihailo, maybe we can bring you in to get, like, this really affects, I mean, this is bad for Russia and China. And I guess this could be a crisis for Iran at the same time that they're having massive protests and there's all talk about, will their regime survive? What can you tell us about what's going on there?
Yes, as you said, this is very catastrophic for Iran, even more so, I would say, than everything that's happened with Russia and China, which sounds a little bit out of left field. What's Iran got to do with Venezuela? It's on the other side of the world. It's nowhere near the Muslim world. Well, a lot of analysts would tell you that Venezuela has almost become a proxy of Iran in the same sense as Lebanon under Hezbollah and some of these other countries have become proxies of Iran. And obviously it's not Islam that's uniting these two different parts of the world, but it is a same shared hatred of America, shared hatred of this Western system, you could say, as well as being too weak to stand up to it by themselves. They were targeted by similar financial constraints, sanctions and the like, that basically shut them out of the world economy. And so they basically, the two governments, both in Venezuela and Iran, decided the only thing to do is to band together and share the burden with each other and do as much dealings with each other as they could, because they couldn't really do much openly with most of the other world. And the main common denominator physically on the ground would be their oil trade. Iran is obviously a huge producer of oil. Jeremiah, as he just mentioned, Venezuela also produces a lot of oil. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world, but they don't have the expertise, the technology, the experience in refining the oil that Iran has. Both these countries have been under strict American sanctions to their oil trade, and both have basically been trading oil with each other to send out to the rest of the world to get it refined, to get it under the radar, so to speak, of American sanctions. There's one report by the Israeli magazine Calculist that claims Iran sent Venezuela under 100,000 barrels of crude oil per day in 2023. That doesn't sound like much, but you assume, this is quoting them, a ceiling of 100,000 barrels per day, around 36.5 million barrels annually, at prices of $60 to $80 per barrel, translates into a notional value of up to $3 billion per year. That is just what Iran had been sending Venezuela. But oil wasn't, you could say, the big prize. As Jeremiah mentioned, Venezuela is close to the U.S. Having a base there means being able to hurt the U.S. in ways that they couldn't do just from the Middle East. And so Iran has been taking advantage of that, especially through its proxy Hezbollah, which I just mentioned. Now, Hezbollah has even gotten permission from the Maduro regime to use Venezuelan territory as its own training centers. The biggest one of that would be in Margarita Island, this island in the Caribbean, which Hezbollah had a compound to forge documents, basically, for its own members to get fake passports, etc., and travel throughout Latin America to do whatever it is they're planning on doing, which means terrorism and crime. And there's even reports that Maduro himself issued Venezuelan passports to Lebanese Hezbollah members, perhaps even up to 10,000, according to Lebanese sources, to travel throughout the region and accomplish their goals. And like any other criminal enterprise in Latin America, Hezbollah got heavily involved in the drug trade, especially cocaine. In 2016, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency estimated Hezbollah gained as much as $400 million a year just from selling cocaine in Latin America. For some perspective, Iran directly sent Hezbollah an estimated $700 million a year. So this was over half of the budget that they were getting directly from Iran. And of course, all that lot of that cocaine goes back to the United States to kill Americans. And the money that Hezbollah makes on that's sent back to the Middle East to build up their military arsenal to go kill Jews. There was one US estimate that suggested Hezbollah was among the top five criminal organizations in the world because of this trade, next to MS-13 and various Mexican cartels. So through this proxy branch of Hezbollah being in Venezuela, then spreading out throughout the New World, this was a huge leverage on Iranian power, on Iranian finances, and giving it an ability to hurt America in a way it couldn't really do otherwise. Now, as Andrew mentioned, technically the regime is still in power in Venezuela. I don't think there's been any news of a mass exodus of Lebanese leaving Venezuela. So the infrastructure probably still in place, but this is still a huge warning to Iran to end its trade. And if you listen to Secretary of State Rubio on the media, the two names he keeps bringing up over and over again are Iran and Hezbollah, these are our priorities. And so if the government there doesn't start playing ball, you could expect a lot more of this kind of action against Hezbollah. Hezbollah knows this, and one way or another, you could almost say the this whole drug empire they've built is about to die.
Thank you very much for that, Mihailo. I mean, the link between Venezuela and Iran and Hezbollah, I mean, cannot be overstated. I was just reminded of Operation Cassandra, this DEA investigation, Drug Enforcement Agency investigation into these ties between Hezbollah and Venezuela that Barack Obama essentially shut down and covered up. In the years since then, we've got more of that information. And they uncovered drug dealings that were depositing $200 million a month into a Lebanese bank account. And these ties between Venezuela and Iran's global terrorism network, not just Hezbollah, it was called the largest material support scheme for terrorism operations in world history. So this is what was going on between Iran and Venezuela.
And Venezuela, for its part, has a large Lebanese diaspora in there and has had for a while. And a lot of these figures, they still have connections with the homeland. A lot of these figures have made lots of money, own property, while allegedly having connections with Hezbollah. And Nicolas Maduro has appointed a lot of these figures into his cabinet, even. Alex Saab might be a name some people recognize. He's a foreign minister in Venezuela. No, I think he actually still is a minister in Venezuela. And he was indicted by the US for money laundering of $300 million just in like with the operations he was doing. And he was considered one of those links between Venezuela and Hezbollah. And when you combine the loss of Maduro and the exposure of all of this and putting all this in jeopardy with everything else that's going on in Iran, the largest protests possibly in Iranian history, potentially even plans for the Ayatollah to evacuate Tehran, this could not have come and hit Iran at a worse time.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that in just a second, but also you've got it's not just toppling Maduro. You've also got this efforts to hunt down Venezuelan oil tankers that is really like there's a whole network of oil tankers that are helping Iran and Russia evade American sanctions. So America and a lot of other countries are putting real pressure on these two countries. They're trying to stop Russia and Iran, invading their neighbors, supporting terrorism, being aggressive, by not buying their oil, by cutting them off from this incredible source of funding that these both nations have. And a key reason that Iran and Russia have been able to resist that pressure is this shadow fleet of oil tankers. And Venezuela is part of that network. China is as well. They're able to then get oil at a discount by buying this kind of shadow illegal oil. And right off, well, even before kidnapping Maduro, America's been going after these fleets. They embargoed they've been blockading Venezuela's coast. And you had this dramatic standoff this week with the ship formerly known as Bella One that America tried to interdict on December 17th. It fled. It was a Panama-registered oil tanker heading to Venezuela from Iran. And the determination with which America, and then Britain even played a role, has gone to try and capture this tanker has led a lot of people to wonder, what intel does the U.S. have on this tanker? Has it been is it more than just an empty tanker that's made its way from Iran to go pick up oil in Venezuela? Or was it carrying some kind of Russian weapon system to Venezuela? Why is America working so hard to get this? But anyway, this ship, it fled. It then changed its registration from Panamanian to Russian. They painted a Russian flag on the hull. A Russian submarine was in the area. Russian naval assets were coming to try and protect it. And America captured it. I mean, boarding a vessel, a hostile boarding effort, this is something very difficult, something very dangerous, something that can easily go wrong. And yet they did it. They grabbed it. But there's at least 16 tankers that have fled Venezuela and gone dark. There's a dozen of them that have 12 million barrels of oil on them between them all. It's worth about $500 million. So there's $500 million of oil just kind of randomly fleeing around the world right now. Pete Hegseth, the U.S. Defense Secretary, unless he's changed his name to War Secretary by now, I'm not sure, but he said the blockade of sanctioned and illicit Venezuelan oil remains in full effect anywhere in the world. So, you know, they're trying to really crack down on this fleet. So you mentioned the protests in Iran. I mean, are we seeing Iran hit by what's happened already? Or is it just more, you know, it's going to take time for the effects to filter down to Iran, but perhaps there's kind of a moral lift to the protesters in seeing a similar dictatorship. Okay, maybe the regime's not falling, but the guy at the top disappear.
I would definitely say there is a moral effect on the protesters. Like, ever since what happened with Maduro circulated around the world, you've seen, at least on social media, protesters get very much more like shouting, like, Trump, save us, like you save the Venezuelans and that sort of thing. The Iranians themselves, all this money going to Hezbollah, etc., as I mentioned, they have even bigger concerns at home right now to worry about. So I don't think it's really set in to them on what all of this means. But at the same time, you're seeing all of this. You're seeing the Iranian regime take more and more drastic measures, like cutting off internet, cutting off telephone wires. And you're seeing, on the other side, opposition groups like Kurdish parties encouraging their people more and more to take to the streets, and the people are largely heeding those calls. So at the very least, there's nothing good in this for Iran. And even President Trump likes to fan the flames with this, I think, as well. He, a few days after what happened with Maduro, he sent the Delta Force to Germany and some other aircraft over to the United Kingdom, as he was saying, giving a threat to the Iranian regime that if you kill those protesters, we are locked and loaded and ready to go, which they have, which they did before he even put that threat out. I was regularly checking the pizza index to see if there was anything going on in the Pentagon as a response. So far, to my knowledge, nothing big has happened on that front, but I don't think it needs to. Just this kind of saber rattling itself is already having a destabilizing effect on the Iranian government's actions and a moral boost, as you said, to the people on the ground.
And the pizza index, for those of you that that haven't seen this, I think this is pretty funny, is you can actually track in real time how many orders the pizza restaurants, pizza delivery places around the Pentagon or around the CIA and Langley, how many orders they're getting. And this is often seen as a good indication of if people are working late and they're ordering in pizza, then it means something is going on. And so there's a variety of indices that keep track of that. Well, thank you for that, Mihailo. And I think we can start pivoting to look at the future, about what the Bible says is, or how the Bible analyzes this, and what Bible prophecy says is going to happen next. And part of this is already fulfilled Bible prophecy. Before Donald Trump took office, very early on in the year, this was in his article, Why God is Saving America Through Trump. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry wrote, "One consistent message of Bible prophecy is that when we obey and serve God, we receive blessings. And when we disobey and reject him, we receive curses." He said, "Read Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, which specifically lists those blessings and curses. And, you know, we can look at that. And there's a wide variety of curses there. And America has begun to experience many of them. And if America continues to disobey God, those curses are going to intensify. But one of those curses is in verse 19. It says, "And I will break the pride of your power." That's what we've seen from America, and definitely for Britain, for decades, where there is a lot of power, but America's too afraid to use it. And there's just a lot of mealy-mouthed discussion and delay and fear of risk. And so we get America's humiliating withdrawal from Afghanistan and people being left behind and just weakness being telegraphed to the world. And in that article, Mr. Flurry said, "However, prophecy shows that some of those curses, you know, like the one we just read from Leviticus 26 and verse 19, some of those curses are going to abate under Donald Trump's leadership. We can expect this to happen." It happened. This kind of curse of breaking the pride in America's power has abated with what happened with Maduro, the way America's going after these tankers, the effect that this has had on Iran, the way that they're targeting a hostile nation that is really an enemy of all the world. But it's important to understand, if we're looking at where this is leading, why those curses are being lifted. And Mr. Flurry says, "Is this because the nation is becoming more righteous and pleasing to God? Actually, scripture is clear that there are times God blesses despite the sins of the people." And that's what he talks about in that article, that this is not a sign of our righteousness, that the nation has repented and been forgiven. There's a whole lot of evil going on. Instead, God is lifting some of those curses so that we have an opportunity to repent, to turn to, you know, he's worked a miracle. He's displayed his power. Donald Trump was, his life was preserved. He was brought back into office. Mr. Flurry said, based on Bible prophecy, he'd come in, back into office. It happened as fulfilled prophecy. We have an opportunity to respond to that fulfilled prophecy, to take action, to see, well, yeah, the Bible has real power. That prophecy was fulfilled. I'm now going to get my life in line with how the Bible says to live it. God's given us that opportunity. And to give us some time to do that, a very short amount of time, some of those curses have been temporarily lifted. And a big part of that repentance would be turning to God and getting his input on, okay, individually, how do I deal with the problems in my life? How do I conduct my family life, my personal morality, my daily routine? I'm going to consult God and the Bible on how to do that. And then nationally, turning to God, praying, holding a day of repentance and prayer, as President Lincoln did, putting out a proclamation, like Abraham Lincoln's Thanksgiving proclamation, saying, well, we owe everything to you, God, and direct us, show us the way forward. And so Donald Trump is not doing that. So, yeah, you know, we've seen pride in America's power, but as we look forward, well, what's going to happen next? Donald Trump isn't seeking guidance from God. He's trying to keep America safe under his own efforts. He's very confident that he can do that, but he's not getting God's guidance. And another of those curses in Leviticus 26 and verse 20 is that your strength shall be spent in vain. Again, there's power there, there's strength there, but America doesn't benefit from it. And the big lesson, one big lesson to take from Donald Trump's return is in Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, where Jeremiah wrote, "It is not in man that walks to direct his steps." And we do not see that attitude from America as a whole, from the American leadership. And so, you know, this was really impressive. And I think we can pay tribute to the bravery, the competence of the American soldiers, you know, the American weapon system that America used, the weapons, there was real power there. But power without God's protection is not enough. And there are many, many powerful nations in the Bible that God brought low. And so, yeah, like they dealt with Iran, there's power, there's things that we can appreciate here. But we need to understand that warning. But so with that in mind, maybe, Andrew, what do you see as you know, the Bible talks a lot about Britain and America, and there's definitely a lot of modern nations in the Bible. It doesn't specifically tell us, well, here's a 5-year plan of everything that's going to happen to every nation in the Bible. So there's details, certainly, that we don't know. But what does the future look like for Venezuela and the fallout from this?
Yeah, those are all very good questions. Like I said, this is something that we predicted on Trumpet World and on the Trumpet website and the Trumpet magazine before it happened, that there would be regime change in Venezuela. And unlike other news agencies that are relying mostly on the Pizza Index and other things to predict things, we do check those. And I've read quite a bit of George Friedman's analysis on U.S. strategy in the Caribbean. But we're made that prediction primarily based off Bible prophecy. Two prophecies in particular, a short-term one and a long-term one. The short-term one we've already hit quite a bit in 2 Kings 14, verses 26 through 28. It talks about a national resurgence under an end-time type of King Jeroboam II. Back in 2016, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury identified Donald Trump as that Jeroboam II figure. So this resurgence, you're looking back historically, it was actually even a territorial resurgence under Jeroboam II. He reconquered Damascus and Hamath and other cities that had been lost to Israel. So expecting, in the short term, an expansion of U.S. influence, possibly even an expansion of U.S. territory, but at least an expansion of U.S. influence. Donald Trump, he's talking about regime change in three nations close to the U.S. right now, Venezuela, Cuba, and Denmark. Venezuela relying more on military power to topple a leader. Cuba, he's saying that, well, as soon as we track down those oil ships and cut off their economic links, economic power will cause Cuba to fall. And then Greenland's more, they already have an independence referendum for Denmark in the works for 2029, about 4 years out. Roughly 80-something percent of Greenlanders say they'd like to be independent of Denmark if they could have guarantees that it didn't hurt their standard of living. So the Trump administration, they're already talking about cash payouts. Like how much, there's only 57,000 people in Greenland. Like how much do we have to pay them to vote, leave Denmark and become their own independent republic? So we'll see how that goes. I personally think by the end of Donald Trump's term, it's very likely we'll have different, completely different governments in Venezuela, Cuba, and Greenland, all three. But then the more long-term prophecy.
Just to help, I mean, just as we pivot for the long term, I think what I find fascinating here is that, like, Donald Trump is exactly right, I think, in all of these. I think certainly there is room for debate and discussion around, is antagonizing Europe the way he has been doing, and some of this talk about military invasion of Greenland, is that wise, given that there are much easier economic ways to take over Greenland? And if he'd have just focused on the buying out from the start rather than threatening to invade, you know, there would have been a lot less friction there. But also European leaders are kind of playing that up as a way to distance themselves from Donald Trump. But setting that aside, like, these are really good things. You know, Venezuela getting rid of a hostile regime very close to America. I mean, there were, it was like going back to Kaiser Wilhelm, he had multiple schemes of getting a base in Venezuela and then using that as a base to attack the United States. America does need to be vigilant about enemies in Venezuela. Exactly the same in Cuba. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury had a lot to say about the danger of a hostile regime in Cuba. And you've got the Cuban Missile Crisis, the danger of Cuba as a missile base that can lob, potentially even, that could have lobbed nuclear missiles to America because it's so close, in a time period that would be almost impossible for America to respond to those. They'd be hitting so quickly. But then also, Cuba, like, I think it's something like 40-50% of America's overseas trade comes through the Gulf of Mexico, and it goes around Cuba. Cuba has the ability to shut that down. If you're going to besiege the United States, Cuba is an excellent basis for doing that. And that's why repeatedly you've had European powers try to get control of Cuba, or to try and get control of, is it San Dominique or San Domingo, the island next to that with Haiti and San Dominique on it. And then Greenland. You know, we've had a lot to say. Jeremiah's written a fair bit in the past about, say, the battle for the Arctic and Russia and even China moving up into the Arctic, the threat that that poses to the United States. So from like a strategic, we're trying to battle these different enemies and look for strategic faults, he's spot on. And that's why it's fascinating to see, you know, obviously Barack Obama wasn't spot on and was actively trying to destroy and weaken the United States and was doing the opposite of this. We've now got a leader that is alert to threats. And yet, Bible prophecy talks about he's not going to keep America safe through this focus on these areas.
Right. I'm reminded of in the 40s, Life magazine here in the United States published a series of maps. If the Nazis were to invade North America, how would they do it? And they weren't like secret Nazi classifications. It was a popular magazine, but almost all of them focus on Cuba and Greenland. It's like the two islands closest to the United States where you could gather troops. So if you're looking at, and there's over 100 prophecies in the Bible about a revived Holy Roman Empire invading the United States, you're like, well, logistically, how would they do that? It's like, well, Life magazine back in the 40s thought that Cuba and Greenland would be important just purely based on geography. So I feel like in many ways, since Donald Trump's focusing on, he does recognize that there is a threat there, that the United States has to do something about. Now, we've been talking on this program that, like I said, this temporary resurgence, these both Cuba and Greenland could be territories the United States, like God could orchestrate things where we get both of those in order to protect us. But that's the big question is like, is God behind it or is God saving the country? Because those 100 prophecies say that if God's against you, there's actually even in Deuteronomy 28, you mentioned, he said that like your enemies will besiege you in all your gates. Cuba's very clearly a sea gate. Like I said, 50% of U.S. trade comes through the Gulf of Mexico. If you look at the map, the Cuba's right in between the Yucatan Peninsula and Florida. You got these two peninsulas. So like those boats come right through two channels right next to Cuba. Greenland is also a sea gate. It's a wider one. They call it like the UK Iceland Greenland gap, that like if you're looking at ships going from the Atlantic into the Arctic, they go through that area. So it's a wide sea gate, but still a sea gate that God says, if you turn against us, your enemies are going to use those sea gates to besiege you. Also prophecies in Isaiah 23 about this economic mart of nations besieging America economically, led by Tyre. Now, Tyre, if you're a history buff, you know that was the capital of the Phoenician Empire. After the Assyrians conquered Israel, they also conquered Phoenicia. The Phoenician government actually went into exile in Carthage. So the Punic Wars were the new Phoenicians. And the Assyrians kept Tyre. So from that point, Carthage was like the Phoenician center, but Tyre was actually the financial trade hub for the Assyrian Empire throughout the Mediterranean. So this reference to Tyre in Ezekiel, who was writing after the Assyrian conquest of Israel by some time, is primarily about a European trade bloc besieging America. Now, our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Fleury, wrote an article titled Preparing to Besiege America Economically, which also pointed to South America. There's not a lot of specific Bible prophecies about South America, but they are Roman Catholic, like they are in Europe, and the most common languages, Spanish and Portuguese, are languages that came from EU member states. And just logistically, because of the importance of Cuba and Venezuela, like if the European Union was to besiege the United States, they'd need Latin America. And they're working right now, they're hoping by the end of the month to have a trade deal between Mercosur and the European Union, Mercosur being a South American trade bloc.
And the European Commission just voted to approve that today.
Okay, so that deal's going forward. Now, it's interesting because Venezuela is currently a suspended member of Mercosur. They're not roped into this deal. They would have been, but they got suspended from Mercosur after they started just blatantly rigging elections. So you've got a case where the Maduro regime is, like I said, they're allies with Iran, they're allies with Russia, they're allies with China, they're not allies with Mercosur, and they're not part in this EU trade bloc. So for this prophecy about like this trade bloc that includes Kittim and Tarshish and some of these other prophetic names for Asia, but it's led by Tyre, so you're really looking for a more pro-European leader in Venezuela and a less pro-Russian one. And that really informed our analysis that, like, Maduro's too pro-Iranian, he's too pro-Russian, he's too pro-Chinese, he's not pro-European enough. He doesn't really fit into this growing trade bloc. And for that reason, he probably has to go and be replaced by a more conservative, Catholic, pro-European leader. Now, it's interesting. We've written an article, I think I wrote an article over 10 years ago, titled, like, Is Venezuela Ready for a Roman Catholic Spring? Playing off the idea of the Arab Spring that was going on at the time. We were like a more pro-Catholic Venezuela. Now, it is interesting is that when I wrote that article, I didn't necessarily foresee the convergence between this temporary American resurgence and the European besiegement of America. Because now it's kind of an ironic twist of fate. It seems like this Trump administration expanding its influence into Cuba and Venezuela is actually pushing out some of the same leaders who are stopping them from joining Mercosur and making a trade bloc with the European Union. So, like I said, the short-term prophecy is like we're having expanding American influence in the Caribbean. But in the process of pushing Russia and China out of the Caribbean, they're also laying the groundwork for this Latin American European alliance against Venezuela. Because as we mentioned before, there's not actually regime change in Venezuela yet. They just got rid of the leader. So now they have to figure out, like, how do you make this regime change permanent? Well, Secretary of State Marco Rubio already sat down with Cardinal Parolin. He's the Secretary of State of the Vatican this week to talk about what's next for Venezuela. So the U.S. has already reached out to the Roman Catholic Church to be like, all right, we're toppling the old regime. Can you help us build a new one?
That is just such a critical lesson from all this, that Barack Obama was bringing the nation down. He was empowering countries like Venezuela. He canceled the Monroe Doctrine. He said the Monroe Doctrine is over and you can celebrate that. And that's a good thing. The era of the Monroe Doctrine is in the past. It's evil. It's imperialist. You know, he empowered Iran through the nuclear deal. Well, now under Donald Trump, there's a revival. The Monroe Doctrine is back. People are even calling it the Dunroe Doctrine, or he is. I don't know who else is calling it that. But he's reviving the era of the Monroe Doctrine. He's taking practical steps to keep America safe. So there's a revival. But if you're just trying to keep America safe on human strength and power and human wisdom and human understanding, you know, we don't know exactly the future. We don't know all the ramifications of what we're doing. You know, what are even some of the long-term ramifications of some of what Jeremiah was talking about in terms of the rule, like weakening some of these rules and legal protections and international law? And what happens as we normalize going in and capturing a head of state? Are we going to see other countries using that as a precedent? And then America's not even watching for Europe really moving in there. And they've been empowering Europe in Europe. And you know, maybe if Europe and the Catholic Church step forward, I mean, certainly Marco Rubio's discussion looks like they're thinking in this way and saying, hey, we'll give you a hand over here. Yeah, we're happy to move in there and help use the fact that Venezuela and Cuba are very Catholic to put in place new regimes. You know, it seems like the Trump administration would say, yeah, thanks for giving us a hand. So you do all of this on human strength and power, and it will end in disaster. That's a massive lesson that God is teaching the United States through all of this. And it's a massive lesson we can personally understand. Like, yeah, you can live your life on human understanding and human wisdom and apply some good principles and make some improvements. But if you really want to make your life a success, you know, you need to be, you know, that's where the Bible comes along. Jesus Christ said, I'm come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. The way to the abundant life is spelled out in the Bible. The way for America as a nation to have an abundant life is in the Bible. But there's one more thought I'd like to just conclude the show with on, I think something that's quite positive is, you know, it was genuinely refreshing to see Nicolas Maduro being dragged before a court. You know, this world is full of evil men, probably men arguably even more evil than Maduro. And generally they seem like they get away with it. Even someone like, say, Bashar al-Assad, killing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of his own people. Okay, great, he's out of office, but he's just living in a comfortable retirement in Russia. You know, he's not getting pulled before a court the way that he deserves, let alone Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, with, you know, millions of his own people, a couple of million perhaps, in concentration camps. But there is justice coming for those leaders. And seeing Maduro given justice, I think, can give us a vision of that. David had a lot to write about evil men receiving justice. I mean, he had a real yearning for evil men being brought to justice. He wrote about this many times in the Psalms. One of these is in Psalm chapter 9, verse 5 and 6, where he says to God, "You have rebuked the heathen, you have destroyed the wicked, you have put out their name forever and ever. O you enemy, destructions are come to a perpetual end." Now, there are people destroying the earth, and their destructions are going to come to an end. And not just an end, a perpetual end, a permanent end, a forever end. A world without evil dictators is coming. And these men, you know, even if they die in office, there's a time when they will be brought to justice. Mr. Flurry has a book, The Psalter of Tara, that's just a wonderful book about the Psalms that David wrote. And he commented on Psalm chapter 9, "These are promises we can cling to. The wicked will be brought to justice. Oppression will cease. This is a wonderful prophecy we all need to have our minds on daily." I mean, God is going to hold all of the Maduros to account. They are all ultimately going to be brought before judgment, the way that Maduro was kidnapped and brought before a judgment seat. And unlike Maduro, where the regime is still there and there's still potential for Venezuela to be involved in a lot of evil, God is going to perpetually end all of that destruction. And in his infinitely greater wisdom and his knowledge of human nature and the future and his power, he's going to bring about perfect justice and perfect peace. God is about to free the world from all evil dictators forever. I think that's a wonderful note to end this discussion on Maduro on. Thank you for joining us today. We've pretty much focused on this one gigantic news story, though we have brought in, I think, with things like the protests in Iran and Mercosur, some of the other biggest events of the week into that discussion. But we'll be back in a week's time for our regular week in review show. But we'll maybe catch up on any things that we missed from this week with that more exclusive focus. But thank you very much to Jesse Hester, James Gill, and George Haddad for engineering and production. Thank you very much for our panel. Thank you to you for joining us. We also have another big panel event coming for Wednesday's show. We've got a year in review with just one or two extra guests as well back in this big studio where we're talking about all of the major events from 2025. We'll hopefully see you then. And until then, keep watching your world.